They heed not the silent power which looks deep down below, which is seen only in its results, and is not heard by its much crying. You hear much of a noisy, undisciplined mass, not numerous, indeed, but obtrusive, and you say well that it is not such cries that can regenerate the world. You shrink intellectually from their utterances, and are inclined to question whether this, that is so forbidding, can indeed be of God, and for good. A part only is visible to you, and that part but dimly. Of the hidden, silent votaries of a faith which comes to them from the God who is revealing himself to them in ways which come home to their several necessities, you hear and know nothing. Such are outside of your ken, though they may and do exist all around you, the faithful communers with the spheres, who know in what they have believed, and who drink in, hour by hour, fresh store of grace and knowledge, waiting for the time when they, too, shall be emancipated from the prison house of the body, and rise to take their part in the glorious work. And so it chances that, both from the obtrusive crying of the one and from the silence of the other, both from the limited nature of your faculties and from the still more limited opportunities for observation, you take a narrow view, and substitute a part for the whole, representing the great body by that limb which is least fairly a specimen of it. We are disposed to question your conclusion as to any phase of spiritualism being bad or mischievous in its outcome, while we deny altogether your ability to pronounce any opinion upon the broad question in its ultimate issues. For what is the real truth? The operations of the Supreme are uniform in this as in all things else. The evil and the good are mingled. He does not use great messengers for that work which can be accomplished by more ordinary spirits. He does not send the high and exalted ones to minister conviction to an undeveloped and earth-bound spirit. Far otherwise, he proportions his causes to the effects which they are intended to produce. In the operation of the ordinary processes of nature, he does not produce insignificant results from gigantic causes. So in this domain of spirit agency, they who are crude in intellect, and undeveloped in aspiration, whose souls do not soar to heights of moral and intellectual grandeur, such are the charge of spirits who know best how to reach and touch them, who proportion their means to the end in view, and who most frequently use material means for operating on an undeveloped intelligence. To the uneducated in mind and soul, the spiritually or intellectually unprogressed, they speak in the language most intelligible to their wants. The physical operation of force that can be gauged by external sense is necessary to assure some, nay, very many, of existence beyond the grave. Such receive their demonstration, not from the inspiring voice of angels, such as those who in every age have spoken to the inner souls of the man who formed and guided that age, but from spirits like unto themselves, who know their wants, their mental habits and altitudes, and who can supply that proof which will come home to and be acceptable by those to whom they minister. And you require to remember, good friend, that extreme intellectual may coexist with scarce any spiritual development, even as a progressive spirit may be hampered by the body in which it is confined, or bound down by imperfect mental culture. Not to every soul is the spirit voice audible. Not to every spirit is the same proof made clear. And it is very frequently the case that souls which have been so hampered by superabundance of corporeal or deficiency of mental development, find their spiritual progress in a sphere where those faults are remedied. For nature is not changed all at once as by a magic wand. Idiosyncrasy is gradually modified and elevated by slow degrees. Hence, to one who has been born with mental faculties in a high state of development, and who has improved them by perpetual culture, the means employed to reach the uneducated and unrefined must needs seem coarse and rude, even as the issues seem rough and undesirable. The voice is harsh, and the zeal evoked is not according to discretion. The nature is being gradually changed from a blank and cheerless materialism, or a still more hopeless indifferentism, and the springs within them an enthusiasm at the new life which they feel swelling in their souls. They give vent to the joy they feel in tones not cultured but not less real, not pleasing, perhaps, to your critical ear, but not less grateful to the ear of the good father than the cry of the returning son who has wandered from his home and disowned his kindred. The voice is real, and that is what he and we regard. We are not scrupulously nice to mark the exact accents in which the cry is syllabled. So to the spiritually undeveloped, the means used to ensure conviction are not the voices of the angels who minister between God and man, for they would cry in vain. Means are used which may lead the spirit to ponder on spiritual things, and guide it to discern them spiritually. Through the agency of material operations, the spirit is led up to the spiritual. Such operations you are familiar with, and the time will never come when they will be unnecessary. To some it will always be requisite that such training should be the commencement of their spiritual life. And none can deny the wisdom of adapting means to ends, but those who are unwise and narrow in the view they take. The only danger is in substituting the physical for the spiritual, and resting in it. It is but a means, a valuable and indispensable means to some, which is intended to eventuate in spiritual development. So, then, to confine ourselves to the more conspicuous example which offends you, the rude, uncultured, undeveloped spirit. Is the voice which cries to him in tones which sound so harsh, and which produces such results, the voice of evil as you seem to fancy? With the question of evil we have dealt before, and shall deal again, but here we fearlessly say that, save in cases readily discernible, and which bear on their face the marks of their origin, it is not as you fancy. This was at page 94. Section 15. Evil there is enough, alas! Nor will it cease till the adversaries be overthrown, and the victory be complete. We are far from denying or making light of the danger which encompasses us and you. But it is not such as you imagine. Not everything ill-regulated, uncultured, or rude is necessarily bad. Far from it. There is little, very little that is bad, while evil may lurk where you least suspect it. Those struggling souls, so young in their spiritual life, are learning to know that an existence of infinite progression is before them, and that their progress then depends on their mental, bodily, and spiritual development now. So they try to care for their bodies. In place of groveling drunkards, they become enthusiastic abstainers from intoxicating drinks, and in their zeal they would force the habit upon all. They cannot discern nice shades of difference. And frequently their zeal outruns their discretion. But is the rabid enthusiast, with all his illogical reasonings and his exaggerated utterances offensive to cultured taste, is he a worse man spiritually than was the loutish, loafing sot, whose mind was paralyzed with fiery drink, whose body was defiled with sensuality, and whose moral and spiritual progress was utterly checked by habitual intoxication? You know that he is not, that he is alive and awake to what he believes to be his duty, that he is not the hopeless, aimless creature that he was, that he has risen from the dead, a resurrection which causes joy and thankfulness amongst the angels of God. What if his cries lack in logic what they gain in zeal and energy? They are the voice of conviction, the cry of a spirit awaking from the lethargy of death. There is more value, friend, to us and to our God in the one earnest, honest voice of a spirit struggling to make its newfound convictions heard, more to gladden us in our mission, and to cheer us on to renewed exertion, than in the conventional, dreamy, dilettante respectability which will only utter its half-convictions in the minutest drawl of decorous fashion, and will, moreover, be studious to avoid even a whisper that may chance to be unpopular. You say that popular or vulgar spiritualism is undesirable, that its utterances are rude, and its tone repellent. We tell you, nay. Those who thus forcibly state their convictions in terms not very exact and polished come home to the masses far more than any others could with polite and polished utterance. The rough, jagged stone shot from their sling with all the rude energy of assured conviction is more forcible than the calculated utterance of the most cultured and refined mind, whose words are measured by custom, and toned down to the line of respectable moderation. Because they are rough, they are serviceable, and because they deal with actual physical facts, they come home to minds which are incapable of discerning metaphysical distinctions. In the army of the spirit messengers there are ministers suited to every want. There is for the hard materialist who knows naught but matter, the spirit that can show him of an invisible force superior to material laws. To the shrinking, timid soul which cares not for great issues, so it can be assured of the welfare of its own loved ones and of reunion with them, there comes the voice of the departed, breathing in recognizable accents the test needed for conviction, or conveying assurance of reunion and of affectionate intercourse in the hereafter. To the spirit that is best approached through the avenues of the mind by processes of logical argument, there comes the voice that demonstrates external agency, evolves orderly and sequential proof, and builds up by slow degrees an edifice of conviction founded on the indisputable fact. Aye, and above all, to those who have passed beyond the alphabet of spiritual agency, and who long to progress further and further into the mysteries which are not penetrable by the eye of sense, to such come teachers who can tell of the deep things of God, and reveal to the aspiring soul richer views of him and of its destiny. To each there is the suitable messenger and the appropriate message, even as God has ever adapted his means to the end in view. This was at page 95. Section 15. Yet once again. Remember that spiritualism is not, as was the gospel message of old, a professedly external revelation, coming from the spiritual hierarchy to mankind, proclaimed as a revelation, as a religion, as a means of salvation. It is all this, but it is also other than this. To you, and to such as approach it from your point of view, it is this, but to the lowly and suffering, the sorrow-laden and ignorant, it is other far. It is the assurance of personal expectation of reunion, an individual consolation, of private application first of all. It is, in effect, the bridging over, for divers purposes, of the gulf which separates the world of sense from the world of spirit. With the disembodied, as with the incarnate, degrees of development differ, and to the undeveloped man comes most readily the spirit who is on his own mental plane. Hence it is that manifestations vary in kind and in degree, and that frequently enough scum rises to the surface, and prevents you from seeing what is going on beneath. Could you see, as you now see, the signs which have attended and followed similar movements in other ages of the world, you would not fall into error of supposing that these signs are exclusively confined to our mission. They are inherent in your human nature, inseparable from anything which deeply stirs the heart of man. They attended the mission of Moses to the Israelites of old, of the Hebrew prophets, as well as of the Christ. They have appeared at every fresh epoch in the history of man, and they attend the present development of divine knowledge. They are no more a sample of our work than in your political history are the ravings of the excited demagogue evidence of real and influential political opinion. You must distinguish, and to one who lives in the midst of a great movement it is not always easy to do so. It will be easier when, in the time to come, you look back upon the struggle which is now seething around you. We shall have more to say in answer to you. For the present farewell. Plus Imperator. This was at page 96. Section 16. As I attempted to put up their objections, many of which occurred to me, I was stopped. We have something to say by the way of summing up what has already been spoken. You do not sufficiently grasp the fact that religion has a very scanty hold on the mass of mankind, nor do you understand the adaptability of what we say to the needs and aspirations of mankind. Or perhaps it is necessary that you be reminded of what you cannot see clearly in your present state, and in the midst of your present associations. You cannot see as we see the carelessness that has crept over men as to the future state. Those who have thought about their future condition have come to know that they can find out nothing about it except that the prevalent notions are vague, foolish, contradictory, and unsatisfying. Their reasoning faculties convince them that the revelation of God which they are taught to believe to be of plenary inspiration, contains plain marks of human adulteration, that it will not stand the test of sifting such as is applied to works professedly of human origin, and that the priestly fiction that reason is no measure of revelation, that it must be left behind upon the threshold of inquiry, and give place to faith, is a cunningly planned means of preventing man from discovering the errors and contradictions which throng the pages of that infallible guide which is forced upon him. Those who use the touchstone of reason discover them readily enough. Those who do not, betake themselves to the refuge of faith, and become blind devotees, fanatical, bigoted, and irrational, conformed to a groove in which they have been educated, and from which they have not broken loose simply because they have not dared to think. It would be hard for man to devise a means of cramping the mind and dwarfing the spirit more complete than this, persuading a man that he must not think about matters of religion. It is one which paralyzes all freedom of thought, and renders it almost impossible for the soul to rise. The spirit is condemned to a hereditary religion, whether suited or not to its wants. It is absolutely without choice as to that which is the food of its real life. That which may have suited a far-off ancestor may be quite unsuited to a struggling spirit that lives in other times from those in which such ideas had force and vitality. And so the spirit's vital nourishment is made a question of birth and locality. It is a matter over which they can exercise no personal control, whether they are to be Christian, Mohammedan, or, as you say, heathen, whether their god is to be the great spirit of the Red Indian, or the fetish of the savage, whether his prophet be Christ, or Mahomet, or Confucius, in short, whether their notion of religion be that prevalent in East, West, North, or South, for in all quarters they have evolved for themselves a theology which they teach their children as of binding force, as supremely necessary for salvation. It is important that you ponder well this matter. The assumption that any one religion, which may command itself to any one race, in any portion of your globe, has a monopoly of divine truth, is a human fiction, born of man's vanity and pride. There is no such monopoly of truth in any system of theology which flourishes or has flourished among men. Each is, in its degree, imperfect, each has its points of truth adapted to the wants of those to whom it was given, or by whom it was evolved. Each has its errors, and none can be commended to those whose habits of thought and whose spiritual necessities are different, as being the spiritual food which God has given to man. It is but human frailty to fancy such a thing. Man likes to believe that he is the exclusive possessor of some germ of truth. We smile as we see him hugging himself in the delusion, congratulating himself on the fancied possession, and persuading himself that it is necessary for him to send missionaries far and wide, to bear his nostrum to other lands and other peoples, who do but laugh at his pretensions and deride his claims. This was at page 97. Section 16. It is, indeed, supremely marvelous to us that your wise men have been and are unable to see that the ray of truth which has shone even unto them, and which they have done their best to obscure, is but one out of many which have been shed by the Sun of Truth on your world. Divine truth is too clear a light to be tolerated by human eyes. It must be tempered by an earthly medium, conveyed through a human vehicle, and darkened somewhat lest it blind the unaccustomed eye. Only when the body of earth is cast aside, and the spirit soars to higher planes, can it afford to dispense with the interposing medium which has dulled the brightness of the heavenly light. All races of men have had a beam of this light amongst them. They have received it as best they might, have fostered it or dimmed it according to their development, and have in the end adapted to their different wants that which they were able to receive. None has reason to vaunt itself in exclusive possession, or to make futile efforts to force on others its own view of truth. So long as your world has endured, so long has it been true that the Brahmin, the Mohammedan, the Jew, and the Christian, has had his peculiar light, which he has considered to be his special heritage from heaven. And, as if to make the fallacy more conspicuous, the church which claims to itself an exclusive possession of divine truth, and deems it right to carry the lamp throughout all lands, is most conspicuous for its own manifold divisions. Christendom's divisions, the incoherent fragments into which the Church of Christ is rent, the frenzied bitterness with which each assails other for the pure love of God, these are the best answers to the foolish pretension that Christianity possesses a monopoly of divine truth. But the days are approaching when a new ray of light shall be shed on this mist of human ignorance. This geographical sectarianism shall give place before the enlightenment caused by the spread of the new revelation, for which mankind is riper than you think. They shall be made to see that each system of religion is a ray of truth from the central sun, dimmed, indeed, by man's ignorance, but having within it a germ of vital truth. Each must see the truth in his neighbor's belief, and learn that best lessons, to dwell on the good rather than on the evil, to recognize the divine even through human error, and to acknowledge the God-like even in that which has not commended itself to his own wants hitherto. The time draws nigh when the sublime truths which we are commissioned to proclaim, rational and noble as they are, when viewed from the standpoint of reason, shall wipe away from the face of God's earth the sectarian jealousy and theological bitterness, the anger and ill will, the rancor and pharisaic pride which have disgraced the name of religion, and have rendered theology a BU word amongst men. Alas! Alas! That the divine science which should tell men of the nature of his God, and in telling should breathe into his soul somewhat of that divine love which emanates from deity, alas! That it should have become the battleground for sects and parties, the arid plain where the pettiest prejudices and the meanest passions may be aired, the barren, cheerless waste, where man may most surely demonstrate his own ignorance of his God, about whose nature and operations he so bitterly disputes. Theology. It is a BU word even amongst you. You know how, in the ponderous volumes which contain the records of man's ignorance about his God, may be found the bitterest invective, the most unchristian bitterness, the most unblushing misrepresentation. Theology. It has been the excuse for quenching every holiest instinct, for turning the hand of the foeman against kindred and friends, for burning and torturing and rending the bodies of the saintliest of mankind, for exiling and ostracizing those whom the world should have delighted to honor, for subverting man's best instincts and quenching his most natural affections. Aye, and it is still the arena in which man's basest passions vaunt themselves, stalking with head erect and brazen front over all that dares to separate itself from the stereotyped rule of aunt. There is no room for reason where theology holds sway. It is still the cause for most that may make true men to blush, for in its stifling atmosphere free thought gasps, and man becomes an unreasoning puppet. To such base ends has man degraded the science which should teach him of his God. We tell you, friend, that the end draws nigh. It shall not be always so. As it was in the days which preceded the coming of the Son of Man, as it has been in the midnight hours which precede every day dawn from on high, so it is now. The night of ignorance is fast passing away. The shackles which priestcraft has hung around struggling souls shall be knocked off, and in place of a fanatical folly, and ignorant pharisaism, and misty speculation, you shall have a reasonable religion and a divine faith. You shall have richer views of God, truer notions of your duty and destiny. You shall know that they whom you call dead are alive amongst you, living, as they lived on earth, only more really, ministering to you with undiminished love, animated in their unwearying intercourse with the same affection which they bore to you whilst they were yet incarnated. It was said of the Christ that he brought life immortality to light. It is true in a wider sense than the writer meant. The outcome of the revelation of Christ, which is only now beginning to be seen amongst men, is in its truest sense the abolition of death, the demonstration of immortality. In that great truth man never dies, cannot die, however he may wish it. In that great truth rests the key to the future. The immortality of man, held not as an article of faith, a clause in a creed, but as a piece of personal knowledge and individual experience, this is the keynote of the religion of the future. In its trail come all the grand truths we teach, all the noblest conceptions of duty, the grandest views of destiny, the truest realizations of life. You cannot grasp them now. They gaze and bewilder your spirit, unaccustomed to such glare. But, mark well, friend, brief space shall pass before you recognize in our words the lineaments of truth, the aspect of the divine. Plus Imperator. This was at page 99. Section 17. I think that all my friends were satisfied that I was too persistent in my objections. I, however, felt that I had no conscientious course open but to do my best to probe to the very depths this strange message that stirred me so violently. I could not satisfy myself, nor could I rest unsatisfied. I recurred to the strife. Imperator's argument being concluded, I pondered it carefully, and 2 days after, July 14, 1873, made a rejoinder on the points which still seemed difficult to me. These referred to 1. Identity. 2. The nature and work of Jesus Christ. 3. External evidence confirmatory of the claims made. I requested that independent communications should be made through another medium, and expressed my intention of seeking out some medium with a view to getting such authentication. I also traversed the views put forward respecting the teachings in many ways which it is not now important to particularize. My answer expressed fairly my convictions at that time, but I see now that my rejoinders were based upon insufficient knowledge, and they have since been met in many ways, sufficiently, at any rate, to assure me that what remains unanswered will in due time receive a reply. But, at the time, I was very far from being satisfied, and expressed my dissent emphatically. In reply it was written as follows: Friend, your statement has the merit of candor and perspicuity, which you allege that ours lacks. We have no difficulty in seeing your difficulty, though we find it impossible to supply it, and undesirable even if it were possible. If we fail at once to comply with all the conditions which you prescribe, we say again that it is from no lack of desire to afford you every satisfaction. We desire earnestly to bear conviction in upon your mind, but in so doing we must use our own means at our own time. It would be to us most sad, most deplorable, that our work should be marred or delayed by the failure of part of our plans. If it were so, we should regret it both on your account and on our own, but we are unable to change the result. We are not omnipotent, and we cannot influence you save by the ordinary processes of argument and evidence which do not now reach your mind. That being so, we recognize the fact that you are not yet prepared to receive our words, and we wait in patience for the time when they shall find an entrance into your mind. Into most of the questions which you have raised we do not follow you. They have been answered before, so far as it is now desirable to answer them. Nothing that we could now say would add any force to the replies which have been already given. Into matters of opinion it is idle for us to enter. Whether what we say seems to you consistent with what we do or have previously done is a very small matter. You are not now in the best condition to judge dispassionately on such a matter. Whether the eventual outcome of what you call spiritualism is what we say, or what you think, is equally beside the point. We view the question from a more extended standpoint, one to which you are not yet able to mount. Your vision is circumscribed, and we see with clearer eye than yours. Whether you consider our teaching to be a legitimate development of Christianity is also of small moment. You admit its moral grandeur, and we need not discuss the meaning of development. Whether you believe it or not, it is teaching of which the world stands in sore need, teaching which it will sooner or later receive with thankfulness, whether you accept it or not, whether or not you receive us, and are prepared to aid us in disseminating it. We had hoped that we had found an instrument suited to our wants. We hope so still. For we know that the phase through which you are now passing is but a transient one, soon to give place to that assured conviction which is born of doubt. But even if it were not so, we must bow to the Almighty Fiat, and seek anew for means of carrying on the work which we have in charge. No instrument is necessary to our end, though a good one is desirable. We should deplore greatly that you should put aside what is to you a means of enlightenment and progress. But over the issue we have no power. Should you, in the freedom of your will, decide to do so, we shall bow to the decision, and regret that your mind is not sufficiently developed to accept what we have presented to it.